Good morning and welcome into the Wednesday edition of The Daily Perspective. Hi there, Mark Congleton, your sometimes humble host here, piloting our way through this hour of observation, insight, and absurdity. Hoping you are having a terrific Wednesday. Around our place, life is going on as it usually goes on. The wisteria is outgrowing everything else in the yard. The carpenter bees are trying to eat our house. And I'm spending way too much time trying to keep a 30-year-old car on the road. How are you? I hope you're doing well today. Today is going to be a lot of fun. I've got way more stuff to talk about than I have time to talk about it. And as usual, in the run-up to the show, while the pre-show music is rolling, I'm skimming through things and finding more things to talk about, which sometimes I can't talk about because there's not time, and other times we'll bump things from the list. And I just found one of those stories just a moment ago, and we'll address that coming up in just a couple of moments. First off, a little housekeeping. I mentioned that there was going to be an announcement this week, and now is the time for that, and that is that the Daily Perspective website is moving. You're thinking, I never looked at it. Well, why not? Well, that's because it's hard, right? It's been on my name, my website. See, I've had this website for a long, long time. It was just being somebody who was in the radio business and the like. I built a website that was just me, a little bit about me, and it had links to my Flickr stream, which is photography, and the like. And that's really what that was. It really wasn't serving a huge purpose, so I just adopted it to host the Daily Perspective's website. And so when you went to markcongleton.com, or actually you can still do that today, you go to markcongleton.com, and what you see is the page for this podcast. Well, now you can go to dailyperspectivepodcast.com, and that's where the site is. It's in both places at the same time. So take a trip over to dailyperspectivepodcast.com today and have a look at the website. And if you haven't yet, sign up for the daily newsletter and drop me a line. There's a contact link right there near the top of the page. Click contact and get started and send me a note. Tell me hi or whatever, okay? That's dailyperspectivepodcast.com. Should be easy enough to remember. dailyperspectivepodcast.com. All righty then, let's move forward and tackle the issues at hand. And thank goodness there's something not all that heavy to talk about today. You're familiar with the TV show, probably Stranger Things, right? Yeah, they're getting geared up for season number 3. And Stranger Things fans are preparing to binge watch. They will dedicate a weekend. They will get all the snacks, all the goodies. They'll get the pizza. They'll make popcorn. And they will spend the day watching back-to-back episodes of Stranger Things until they have consumed the entire series. And I know this to be true because that's what my wife and I do. It's coming pretty soon. Well, the show is set back in the 80s, and something happened back in the 80s that disturbed and upset a lot of people. And that thing that disturbed and upset a lot of people is making a comeback. New Coke is coming back as part of Coca-Cola's partnership with the next Netflix drama, Stranger Things. The companies announced their venture yesterday. At least one Twitter user was excited about the idea, but reactions were mixed. A guy named Jeff Durso said, I'm going to have to order this. I've always wanted to try New Coke. But then Patrice Lehrmeyer says, New Coke equals awful. But I like what the Coke exec says. Buying a 30-second ad to drop into a certain time frame is not as valuable as it once was. Coca-Cola's bringing back New Coke in honor of Stranger Things. New Coke was considered one of the biggest marketing mistakes. It was a blunder when it was launched back in 1985. Changing Coke's formula didn't sit well, very well with customers. And the new version of Coke, New Coke, which was formulated, it was the taste of Diet Coke with sugar. Because Diet Coke had taken a chunk out of Coca-Cola's ad revenue, or of their sales. It had taken a chunk out of the sales, so Coke said, well, if people like that so much, let's just give them the same flavor in regular Coke. It lasted 79 days. 79 days! Not even 3 months. It didn't. It lasted just over 2 months. 79 days! That's how bad. When have you known a product by a major company to die after 79 days? New Coke! That's the one! Coca-Cola agreed to resurrect the flavor for a limited run after Netflix told the company that season 3 of Stranger Things would be set in the summer of 1985. The company actually had to go get the New Coke recipe out of their safe. Yeah, they've got this huge, mongous safe. They actually own the site where the bank... I don't know if they own the site or they moved the safe, but the safe is at the World of Coke in Atlanta. You actually see it as part of the tour when you go to the what used to be the Coke Museum, the World of Coke in Atlanta. You go there and they show you, they sequester you in a room, they shut the doors behind you, and they show you the safe where the formula for Coca-Cola is held. And that's where the formula for New Coke has been, in that safe, ever since 1985. Workers also had to recreate the logo for New Coke and that slightly different color of red for the cans that they use more than 3 decades ago. They'll be releasing a limited number of New Coke cans tomorrow as part of a Stranger Things package. So look for these limited edition New Coke cans to hit the shelves tomorrow as part of the Stranger Things press packaging. They had to go back. You know what gets me? It lasted 79 days. 79 days! People hated it. I mean, if you weren't around at the time, let me just tell you, as one who was around at the time, when I tasted my first sip of New Coke, the first thing I thought was, oh, I hope they're not eliminating the real thing. Where can I get a can of regular Coke? That was the first thing I thought. Because I thought, if I wanted Diet Coke, I'd buy Diet Coke. Because that's what New Coke tasted like to me at the time. Now, I'm not a big fan of that flavor. It's not the same. It's just not the same. Now, today we have Coke Zero, which is exactly the same. It tastes exactly like regular Coke Classic without the sugar. Back then, we didn't. We had Diet Coke, and only Diet Coke. I never did like the flavor. I wanted the real thing. And so did everybody else. And so 79 days after their brilliant marketing move, and a commercial campaign talking about how popular and how incredible it was and the sales they had, they actually ran commercials talking about how fantastic things were going for New Coke. They dropped it after 79 days being on the market. Ruh-roh. They made a mistake. A miscalculation. A boo-boo. But I like the fact that they're bringing it back as part of promotion for something that is set back when New Coke was around. Now, apparently, New Coke will play into the plot line at some point. Hopefully, kids ordering a Coke and getting it and spitting it out. That would be awesome. I want to see that. Okay. Now, as long as we're looking at things that are oops factors, we talked the other day about Kamala Harris and her plan to close the gender gap, where she talked about mandating that that businesses, she would make it part of the EEOC, that businesses would be required by law to justify what they pay male and female employees to prove that they were not paying men more for the same job as women. Well, it turns out Kamala Harris has got some splaining to do. If Harris is going to start fining CEOs and company leadership for failing to pay men and women equally, she's going to have to start with herself. Her plan would require companies to obtain a written document from the EEOC, the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, officially certifying that they pay men and women equally. If they can't, they'll be fined 1% of earnings for every 1% difference in pay between the genders. Kamala Harris has a simple message for corporations. Pay women fairly or pay the price. That's what their campaign said in a statement. They go on to say, we've let corporations hide their wage gaps but forced women to stand up in court just to get the pay they've earned. It's time to flip the script and finally hold corporations accountable for pay inequality in America. Well, the Washington Free Beacon is reporting that Kamala Harris, under her own plan, would be on the hook for at least a 6% fine. Women working for Harris in both her Senate office and on her campaign earn an average of 94 cents for every dollar Harris's male employees earn. The Free Beacon says, in her Senate office's most recent six-month disclosure, covering the period from April 1, 2018 through September 31, 2018, the median male salary disbursement was $34,999, and the median female salary disbursement was $32,999, leaving women with just 94 cents of every dollar paid to men. The gender pay gap for the previous six-month period, during which the median male salary was $27,167 and the median female salary was $25,749.97, was a nearly identical 6%. And that's an improvement for Harris. Early on in her campaign, the gender wage gap was even higher, with women earning around 87 cents for each dollar earned by a man working for Harris's presidential effort. At its best, the campaign only had a 5% gender wage gap. This is called being shot by your own gun. Because when you look at the finer details and you look at this honestly, you find that there are reasons, there are validities for the differences in wages, the differences in pay. Because when you make this a blanket accusation, it looks very, very bad. But when you look at the specifics, you realize you have people with a different level of talent. You have people with a different level of expertise. You have people with different work schedules, with work commitments, and things like that. And even in Kamala Harris's Senate office and on her presidential campaign, real life applies. And so these people are being paid according to their abilities and the amount of work they do. The fact that women are earning less than the men is because of the choices they make and their performance, not because of their gender. Will she admit to this? I doubt she'll even address it. At least at first she won't address it, that's for certain. She'll ignore the fact that people are pointing this out. She'll ignore it until the eggheads on her campaign come up with some sort of a convoluted explanation that's not really an explanation, because that's how politicians work. It's the old it's the old thing about, if you can't dazzle them with brilliance, baffle them with BS. And that's what politicians do. And that's what Kamala Harris will do. She will baffle people with BS. Because that's what politicians do. So, Kamala Harris has been shot with her own gun. Even her staff, both in her Senate office and on her campaign, reflects the reality of life when it comes to wages. Men and women doing the same job with the same level of expertise, with the same level of performance, make the same money. That's the law, and it has been since 1963. What she wants to do is put the onus on businesses to prove that they're conforming, when actually it's a lot more equitable and fair for people to raise a complaint and go after the business. But that's life on the left. The rules don't apply to them. Even their imaginary rules don't seem to apply, do they? Welcome back to The Daily Perspective. Mark Congleton here. I'm piloting the crazy train down the tracks of life. Hopefully you're having a day that's crazy free, except for being here. Oh, man. Back to the website, dailyperspectivepodcast.com. I encourage you to go by there today. Have a look. Send me an email. There's actually a contact button. You can click that contact button and send me a note. May end up being the best way to send me anything, if you want to. So that's the contact button at dailyperspectivepodcast.com. Jot that down, put it in your browser, bookmark it, make it a favorite. Go there from time to time. Actually, you can find this show every day there. In fact, the podcast is listed there, and if you want to listen to it, you can sit at your computer or wherever, even a mobile device, because it's mobile friendly as well. You can listen to the show there. So it's dailyperspectivepodcast.com. Go there today and let me know you've been there. All right, back to the stories at hand. And one of the stories at hand has been about what's happening in the state of Alabama with abortion. Of course, we're familiar with what has happened, that the legislature passed and the governor signed a bill which basically outlaws abortion in the state of Alabama. This under Roe v. Wade won't stand. It doesn't stand right now. It can't be enforced. But if it makes it as far as the Supreme Court, the hope is that it will challenge the thinking and it will promote examination of Roe v. Wade, and it will reveal that Roe v. Wade is a deeply, deeply faulty law, and it will be reevaluated and hopefully overturned. Well, also in the state of Alabama, the Alabama House of Representatives last night passed State Representative Jenny Shaver's anti-infanticide bill. She's a Republican from Leesburg, Alabama. Democrats in the chamber unanimously opposed the measure. It was called HB 491. It would safeguard against infanticide by requiring a doctor to administer the same level of medical care to a child born alive after an abortion attempt as they would any other child. And why is that? Because it's a child. It is a person. It's alive. The Born Alive bill was introduced by Shaver after the publicized rise of support for infanticide amongst national Democrats, especially following in the wake of statements by policymakers in New York and Virginia. Shaver has said, quote, "There is no such thing as post-birth abortion." Think about those three words. That's infanticide. That's what it is. And what my bill does is, in this situation where a child survives an abortion attempt and is born alive, it would require a physician to exercise the same reasonable care to preserve the life of the child that is born alive. When this happens, if there is any sign of breathing or any other sign of life, there would then exist a doctor-patient relationship between the doctor and the child, so that he would be required to exercise the same degree of physical skill and care to make an effort to reasonably preserve the life and health of that child. House Majority Leader Nathaniel Ledbetter, a Republican of Rainesville, Alabama, was the sole original co-sponsor of Shaver's bill. He has been a strong pro-life voice throughout his time in office, including this legislative session. Democrats filibustered the bill on Tuesday, Cloture had to be invoked shortly before the day's business had to end at midnight on Tuesday. The final vote on the bill as substituted was 66 to 18. No Republicans voted against HB 491, while only one Democrat, State Representative Wandalyn Jivan, a Democrat from Birmingham, voted for the legislation. It was immediately unclear if she accidentally voted yay, as she spoke passionately in opposition to the bill on the floor several times. She actually did accidentally vote for it. She accidentally voted yay. This came after the official Twitter account for the Alabama House Democratic Caucus claimed the anti-infanticide bill equals, quote, criminalizing doctors who attempt to help women make their own choice with their own body. To be clear, HB 491 only deals with children born alive pursuant to an abortion attempt. The bill has nothing to do with a woman's right to an abortion, as Shaver said on the floor. Quote, I really do not see the controversy in this issue. I do not see how anyone with a conscience could oppose rendering aid to a child born alive. Senator Doug Jones, in recent days, has called Republican state legislators callous and extreme for their pro-life views. Wow, Mr. Jones, what's callous and extreme about saving the life of an infant? I'd like you to explain that without dodging the issue and claiming this is about a woman's right to choose. Because at this point, quite honestly, that's just more political BS. Because what we're talking about here is a human life, an infant, a child, born alive. A human being, a person. Stop dodging the issue and lying to your constituents. State Representative John Rogers. We remembered Mr. Rogers. His neighborhood's pretty sad. He has said that Jones called him to say he agreed with Rogers' viral abortion comments. During Tuesday's debate, State Representative Barbara Boyd, a Democrat of Anniston, worried that opposing infanticide would cause economic boycotts of the state of Alabama. This came after Boyd claimed last week that dyslexia does not exist. Somebody is missing a few cards out of their deck. Rogers called HB 491 about the most ridiculous thing I've heard in my life. Well, the bill now goes to the Senate. If HB 491 becomes law, it shall be officially known as Gianna's Law, named after a survivor of an attempted abortion who is now 42 years old and travels the world telling her story. Shaver has met the woman, Gianna Jessen, and called her an inspiration. State Representative Marika Coleman, a Democrat from Birmingham, said a baby born alive after an attempted abortion is not a person. Coleman asserted such a baby would still be a fetus and would not deserve the chance to live. She referred to the mother as the host, seemingly implying that the unborn baby is a parasite by using that analogy. Representative Barbara Drummond, Democrat from Mobile, said she does not see a difference between the born-alive anti-infanticide HB 491 and the near-total abortion ban of HB 314, which was signed into law last week by Governor Kay Ivey. Wow. The main reason I wanted to share this, not because it's just more on top of the Alabama law banning abortion, it was because of those quotes from Democrats. State Representative Marika Coleman actually said that a baby born alive after an attempted abortion is not a person. I dare say that any mom who has held her newborn, even a preemie, would tell you that you're out of your ever-loving mind, Ms. Coleman, that you're a liar, and that your life view is a lie. If you want to call something other than what it is, you can, but that doesn't change what it is. You can call the family dog an octopus if you'd like. It's still a family dog. You can say the sky is yellow. It's still blue. It's a baby. it's a person. And then there's Representative Barbara Drummond from Mobile, who said she doesn't see a difference between the Born Alive anti-infanticide bill and the near total ban on abortion. Frankly, Ms. Drummond, there are differences. One is banning murder, and the other one, by an act of law, commands doctors to preserve life. These Democrats are living a life of delusion. And it's more and more obvious the more they talk, which is why we have to pay attention. We have to pay attention to these people. We can't ignore what they say, because what they say reveals who they really are. And in the cases of State Representatives Marika Coleman and Barbara Drummond, these two people are living in a world of denial. They are preaching a fantasy. They're denying life. They're denying science. And I dare say that these same people and people like them would point fingers at you and call you a science denier for doubting their claims of man-made climate change. Man-made climate change is a very complex issue with a lot of data and statistics. An infant being born alive after an attempted abortion is something that is so blatantly obvious, you would have to be a moron to deny it. And I think that's all I have to say about that. More after the break, when the Daily Perspective continues. Hey, remember, dailyperspectivepodcast.com. Welcome back to the Daily Perspective. Hi there. Good to have you along. Hopefully you're having a big old day. So far, so good, right? Okay. I hope so. Ah, man. Cruising along here, looking at things on online. It's funny how during the breaks I will get back into my scanning to see if there's, you know, anything to talk about. And it's funny how often there actually is. We were just talking about Alabama and the Born Alive Protection bill that's been put under consideration there. And now I see there are some statistics that have hit social media and are spreading like crazy coming out of the state of Florida. And it really does bring to light the true meaning of my body, my choice, which is something you hear chanted at pro-abortion rallies on a regular basis. Sidebar real quick. Did you see where all these people had gathered in Washington, D.C. in front of the Supreme Court to put on a show? Now, the Supreme Court's not even considering this stuff, right? They're not looking at it. It's not even there yet. It's going to be a while before it gets there. But these people are in front of the Supreme Court posturing, politicians especially, and the pro-abortionists are out there with their signs, screaming and yelling, using their slogans and the like, going crazy, and they're getting on the news. I actually saw one exchange between a pro-lifer who was calm, collected, reasonable, rational, just wanted to have a conversation, who said many times, let's talk about it. And the pro-abortion feminist, an elderly pro-abortion feminist, I might add, kept screaming, F you, F you, F you, F you, you effing biatch. There was no exchange of information. There was no talk. There was no anything. There was just anger and hatred coming from the leftists. And it occurred to me that this is like children who have their privileges taken away from them because they've abused them. and they scream and they yell and they pitch a fit and they slam doors and they call people names. And I think it's high time that the adults stand up and say, okay, enough is enough. You've abused your privileges. You've gone way, way overboard. We're taking the car away. And then you have to understand that when you do that, there is going to be wailing and gnashing of teeth. But honestly, I think it's got to happen. Now back to Florida. Florida's annual abortion statistics went viral yesterday, and they gave new meaning to the abortion rights slogan, "My Body, My Choice." The self-reported data collected by the state shows that more than 95% of the abortions performed in Florida last year were for reasons other than the health of the woman or the fetus. Of the 70,000 procedures, more than three-quarters of them were classified as elective, meaning the woman did not provide a reason, and another 20% were said to be for social or economic reasons. Meanwhile, fewer than 1.5% of the abortions were attributed to a threat to the woman's physical health, fewer than 2% to psychological health problems, and 0.67% to a fetal abnormality. Fewer than 0.3% cited a threat to the woman's life. With the Supreme Court thought to have a firm pro-life majority for the first time in decades, the political and culture wars over abortion have flared up again. Republican states have moved to crack down on the procedure. Pro-choice activists like Alyssa Milano have responded with renewed activism, much of it focused on the supposed needs of rape and incest victims. However, as the Florida statistics prove, such cases are extremely rare. The stakes are better encapsulated by the abortion rights slogan, "My Body, My Choice," with an emphasis on choice. According to a 2005 study by the Guttmacher Institute, which is, by the way, affiliated with Planned Parenthood. So when you see Guttmacher Institute statistics put forth, remember that Guttmacher is affiliated with Planned Parenthood. Do you think maybe things will be skewed a bit? Well, the picture is similar on a national level. Just 4% of women report getting abortions because of a physical health problem, 3% because of potential fetal health problems, and fewer than half of 1% because of rape. The most common reasons women cited for obtaining an abortion were not being ready for a child or another child, or being unable to afford one. So let's go back and look at these stats once again. Of the 70,000 procedures that were reported, more than three-quarters of them were classified as elective, meaning the woman did not provide a reason. In other words, just my choice. None of your business. I'm having it done because I want to get it done. Another 20% were said to be for social or economic reasons. Social reasons? Social reasons. Does that mean you don't want anybody to know you got pregnant? Is that what that means? Social reasons. Does that mean you were misbehaving and you were doing something that produces children? And when it produced a child, you were surprised, you were shocked, and you were embarrassed by your stupidity. Meanwhile, fewer than 1.5% of the abortions were health-related, women's health-related. Fewer than 2% to psychological health issues. And just over half of a percent, less than 0.75% to an abnormality with the fetus. My wife and I were talking about this, that she knows someone that that's a friend of hers, whose mother, or who actually not her mother, this person was told by doctors when she became pregnant years ago that her child had a specific problem and that it would be best to abort the child. The doctors told her it would be best to abort because there was a fetal abnormality and this child would never live. That child is alive and well today. Alive and well today, many, many years later. Fewer than 3.3%, 0.3%. Back to the stats. Fewer than 0.3% of cases cited a threat to the woman's life. The numbers of women who said they were pregnant from rape or incest were just 0.14 and 0.01%. 0.01% due to incest and 0.14% due to rape. The claims of rape, oddly enough, tend to be higher than the actual cases when you start looking at things. Now, these stats are being shared all over the place. There are people who are posting them to social media. And I got to be honest with you, it doesn't look good for the ladies in Florida when you look at the stats. My body, my choice takes on a very realistic meaning. And that is that these women are choosing to kill the children produced by their behavior. What other way can we put that? I don't think there is another way to put that. Because sex produces babies. It's not a surprise. This is something medical science has known for ages. And if you participate in unprotected sex, your chances of producing a baby are pretty high. And whether that's by intent or by carelessness or by the heat of the moment or whatever, what you're doing is designed to produce a specific result. A mature, responsible person having made such a mistake would take responsibility for the mistake. And contrary to what the pro-abortionists tell you, murdering that person you produced is not responsible. So the ladies in Florida, 95% of those abortions are cases of normal, healthy babies. 95% of them. 95% of 70,000 procedures. Stop and ponder for a moment. How many of those 70,000 procedures may have ended up being brilliant people who solved our problems with fuel, who solved problems of space travel, who solved communication and other issues? How many of those people could have held the answer to problems we face every day, but because they were inconvenient, they had to die? Welcome back to the Daily Perspective. It's a hump day edition. Boy, I swear I'd never say hump day, and I just did it because I was distracted. I distracted myself, and that's the sad thing, right? Oh, man, looking through comments on the live feed of the Daily Perspective podcast on Facebook, and Sunday you've got a couple of good comments there, and I'm gonna pass them along real quick. First up, California is trying to pass a bill to offer free health care for illegals, never mind the homeless veterans or Americans. What a crap hole. And they're mad because their president refused to give them any more money for the train that never was. He's actually trying to take back the money we've given them because it's just this big boondoggle. They're not, I mean, it's a failure. High-speed rail is something that the left touts as the solution to transportation issues for America. They talk about high-speed rail solving the problems. They're doing it in Europe. They're doing it in Japan. They're doing it in these places. And every place they're doing it is very different than the United States. They have a different outlook on things. They have everything is different. They don't operate the way we do. They don't have the autonomy and the freedom to travel the way we do. It's just very different. So, yeah, high-speed rail, where it works, works. But in America, no. If you've, talk to somebody who has traveled Amtrak. Everybody has this romantic idea of about how awesome it would be to take a trip on the train. My wife Jane and I have talked about doing this. Actually, we talked about it recently. And I priced the tickets to go to New Orleans because our son lives in New Orleans. And we thought, you know, the next time we go visit Joe, let's go down there and let's take the train. And it's cheap. It's very cheap. The two of us could go down there and back for a lot less than we'd pay. I don't think we'd pay that much just for gasoline for the car to go down there and back. But when we got there, we'd have to have a way to get around. We'd either have to be paying taxis, Uber drivers, or renting a car. And it's just, and then I've been online and I've read the reviews of some of the packages that Amtrak offers, because they offer one that's a cross-country trip where you go coast to coast on the rail and you see the sights of America. And I've read this article and seen these pictures and thought, whoa, we've got to do that. And then I started reading comments. Yeah, I did that. What they don't tell you is that most of what you see is warehouse districts, the backsides of buildings, things like that. You know, you see some sites, but mostly what you see is areas of town you wouldn't leave your car parked in. So I kind of canned that idea. But people have this romanticization. They romanticize rail travel, and it's not all it's cracked up to be. Trust me, it's not all it's cracked up to be. There are disadvantages to it, especially in a society where we have our own cars and an interstate system, and we can go places and do things on our own. Also, she comments, if you don't want the baby, let somebody adopt it. If you go through the pregnancy that long, why become a murderer? Well, that's a really, really good question. And I think one of the reasons is that you've been brainwashed. You've been lied to for so long. You've been told that it'll end up in the foster care system. See, that's one of the big lies that we've been told, is that these babies end up in the foster care system. The truth of the matter is, there's a waiting list. People are waiting to adopt. People want babies. So give them up for adoption. Give them up for adoption. That's the thing to do. The option is there. People want to love and raise the child. People can afford to. They're ready to. They're in line waiting. But they've been told that this is the honorable thing to do because you sure wouldn't want to raise that baby in poverty. You don't have to. And you don't have to put it, it doesn't have to be in the foster care system. The child can be adopted and raised by a loving family who will care for it, will educate it, and will give it a fantastic life. That's an option. It's an option they don't tell you about. Hey, and one more comment. Vincent says that Vincent and James are on the chat every day on the live feed. He said, James can tell you how bad an experience Amtrak is. I look forward to hearing that. Please go to dailyperspectivepodcast.com, click the contact link, and send me your story. Please do. I would love to hear it. All right. Moving along real quickly. It's been a while. 1984, the year 1984 was sometime back, and the book that came out has been a while. It's been 35 years since 84, but the language of America's political discourse has never been more Orwellian than it is today in Texas. That's where it's now discrimination to prevent discrimination against a business based on its religious or moral beliefs. Did you get that? Banning discrimination is discrimination. Okay. If you haven't heard the background here, certain liberal cities in Texas are taking their virtue signaling to new heights by refusing to lease space to Chick-fil-A in their airport terminals. That's because Chick-fil-A's owners believe in the biblical definition of marriage and contribute to organizations who teach and promote the same. In America 2019, you're not allowed to believe, promote, support, or teach these things. And if you own a business that wants to operate anywhere liberal politicians have power, they'll find ways to stop you. That's what's happened in San Antonio, where the city council voted to ban Chick-fil-A from the airport on the premise that it would make homosexuals feel unwelcome in the city or something. Because apparently everyone has the right to be free from being exposed to anyone who might disagree with them on something. The Texas legislature knows this is ridiculous and arguably unconstitutional, and it's about to take action to stop it from happening. Monday's vote was the second time the Texas House has taken up the issue. On May 7th, the House Bill 3172 was killed, which seeks to prevent government entities from taking adverse actions against businesses or individuals due to their religious beliefs or moral convictions through a parliamentary maneuver. But days later, the Texas Senate revived the legislation by pushing through a softened companion bill known as SB 1978. Proponents say the bill is necessary to protect businesses like Chick-fil-A, which was barred from opening a new location at San Antonio's airport over its donations to groups that oppose same-sex marriage. You know, like the Red Cross. NBC's coverage of this is really something. They think it's a scandal that the wording in the bill is similar to that proposed by dastardly Christian groups in other states. And they're demanding answers from Texas Republicans about that. So far, they're not getting any, probably because the question is too ridiculous to bother answering. NBC's story is also dripping with the implications that the bill is allowing discrimination rather than preventing it. That's because NBC reporters basically accept the premise of the left about homosexuality, that anyone who embraces the biblical view of it is discriminating, even though it's impossible to see what discrimination is actually going on. If I disagree with something you want to do, but I have no power to stop you from doing it, and I'm not even actively trying to stop you from doing it, how exactly am I discriminating? It would be one thing if Chick-fil-A was refusing to serve gay people or refusing to hire gay people, but Chick-fil-A has no such policies. There is nothing in Chick-fil-A's business practices that anyone could call discrimination. This is all about the personal beliefs of Chick-fil-A's owners and the actions of local politicians to judge those beliefs as unacceptable, regardless of how the actual business operates. And don't lose sight of one thing. This is all about devotion to the Bible. Gay activists hate what the Bible says about homosexuality, but it's right there and there's no getting rid of it. Yet, it doesn't tell Christians to hate gay people. And we don't. It merely spells out what God regards as sin, which is why people like the Cathy family support the teaching that marriage is between one man and one woman according to God's design. Homosexual activism has become the secular left's excuse to marginalize the entire Bible. And one form that takes is that politicians ban businesses from operating in their jurisdictions because their owners live under the Bible's authority. That is textbook discrimination. And the Texas legislature is right to put a stop to it. And yet the media wants you to think this bill promotes discrimination. In their minds, night is day. Freedom is slavery. You see, it's been how long? I talked about this a couple of weeks ago. And these people are still up in arms because some guy, in an answer to a personal question in a Christian publication stated that he believed that marriage should be between a man and a woman. And so they've decided to destroy his business because of it. As I said then, that is not mentally healthy. It's definitely not normal. And that's the end of the show for today. God bless you. Have a great day, and we'll see you back here tomorrow for the Thursday edition of the Daily Perspective. Bye-bye.